My home is Van Buren, and I had my 80th birthday on May 16th of 1971. I want to tell you an event that took place at a town meeting in the Gaiety Theater at Van Buren many years ago. The thing that I always approved and was the fact that the Mr. Iggy Osviolet, although he not an educated man, was very, very strong for education, and he wanted to have school in his district. But in those days, politics controlled the school business. As you know,
The school board
are elected for 3 years, and one of them gets out every year and a new one comes in. So we had a big change of administration in the town of Van Buren. The old crowd that had controlled the town affairs for years and years finally were driven out by the younger element. And of course, they elected one school board. But the other two that remained on there, they didn't bother about going to any school board meeting. And they didn't arrange for a school at the Violet Settlement. And old Mr. Violet used to come down every day and ask his friend Jean-Baptiste, "What up with the culture now? We haven't got any school." "Well, you're going to have some. You're going to have school." And the next day it was always the same story. Well, John finally told him, "Go see the two school board members of the previous out there." So he did. He went and saw Abel Martin, who was one of them, and he told him that he wanted school. And Abel said, "Well, tes amis, go ahead and see your friends there. Get school from them." Of course, they couldn't get school. He had to say yes also. And this went along for a while, and I met old Mr. Violet almost here, going on. "Leo," he said, "les enfants peuvent pas aller à l'école, the little children, I want school." "Well, you can have school." Of course, I was talking French to him. "You can have school if you've got 8 children of school age in your district, even if one of them might be a grandmother. But if she's of school age, you can count her." I said, "Sunday you bring down the names and the age of those people, and I'll know what I can do for you." He did. He brought that after Mass. He came over home, gave me that. Now I said, "Do you really want school?" "Yes." "And will you sign a letter that I'm going to write for you to the state superintendent of school?" "Yes." So that's what I did. And we sent that down. Tuesday, the superintendent of school the late Mr. Charles O'Connell got a telegram from the superintendent of school of the state of Maine to open the Violet School in the Violet Settlement on Wednesday morning without fail.
What year was that?
Oh, way back. And so Charles O'Connell took one of the older girls in the top classes there, and he hired a team, there was no, and he came up in Madawaska here, St. David, and he hired the school teacher. And Wednesday morning, the school teacher drove in there, and old Mr. Vital Valls was out in the yard, in the field out there. And this, there was only two places where the the teacher could stay, was over to Mr. Violet, and the other place was
Busky, that's the name.
She says, I'm the school teacher, I'm going to open up the school this morning. So old Mr. Vital told when the boys there to harness up the horse. And they went over, and he come down to Jean-Baptiste, and he told the other fellows how they had a school. But in the interval, that happened, well, the town meeting was in April, and this was probably in June or July when this thing happened. But they had a town meeting for that purpose. And anyway, old Mr. Violet was very, very glad. And he quoted another example of another schoolhouse in years gone by at, in the settlement of the Cross de Dand, in that place. Well, there was people there, it's probably 2 miles between the start above Keegan and until you hit the other place. And there was some people of a certain age there, and they had children going to school, all right. But after they got old and they had no more children going to school, the old people in the other section down, they had children, but the school was up there, and there's nobody to go to school. So they went ahead and they transferred the school, and they did that twice.
Which school was that?
Out in the panel.
I said them.
The first day that. Yeah. So this was going to be the third time that they wanted back again. And anyway, the late Mr. W. F. Parody was the chairman of the meeting, the special meeting in the theater, and he got up there and he was opposed that. He didn't want that on now for the culture. We haven't got any school over home. And the way it wasn't getting anywhere with that. So finally, old Mr. Iglesias got up, he jammed his hat, and he said, Mr. Paradis, he said, I know that we put wheels under the schoolhouse, and if we have it moved every year, it'll be less costly to the town.
That's very good. So they have the school on the wheels, did they? Or they?
Finally, when they had the teacher, then old Exios came down, went over to Jean-Baptiste. Not the pastor, as they call it. Well, we,
You see, that way we was that in the way. Mais c'est bon, c'est pas toi qui nous l'a pas donné, nous autres. On est obligé d'aller voir les autres.
And this violet settlement, where was that? That was it in the back roads from Champlain Street of today?
What's Alexander that? Road.
Alexander Road, that was the violet settlement?
The violet settlement, yes. Yeah, that was there, see? And the other ones hit it on Croche des Dames, right. See? Right. There was a certain generation of people of practically the same age that brought up a family. And at the other end, well, the people of that age had all died, and there was some old people like me. And the schoolhouse was there, but there was nobody from there to go to school, and all the children were down there. So, to fix that up, they went ahead and took the schoolhouse and moved it down in that section, see?
And, the section of the violet? The section of the violet?
No. Well, right at the boom house there. You know where the piers are there?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and I thought the little house there is still there.
Still there, the house?
The little house. It's a little home.
Oh,
an employee of what you may call them there, lives there.
About what year would you say that was about? What year?
Oh, I don't know. It was, I would say in 1916 or 17, somewhere around there. But that was, he had solved that desire on everybody left.
That's pretty good.
And then another one was that during the Grippe Espagnole, when we had everybody died, all the young people, there was Mrs. Pat Scott, who was a sister to late Vital Violet. And she was a nurse. And by God, she worked with the doctors, and we had some nurses from outside. And I remember that they put a hospital on the third floor of the Sacred Heart School. And we had masks out there. I never had that grip, but my wife had it and almost died, and she was practically the only woman that was pregnant and didn't die. She lived through it. After this thing was over, the next spring, people began to realize there's so many had been helped by that nurse that they thought it was a good idea to have a town nurse and so forth. And that was a hot argument, pro and con. I remember Dr. Terry was in favor of that, and a lot of people, prominent people, they spoke for probably an hour or so. And I was sitting in the seat with my friend Francois Michon and Henry Scott. And two seats before us, there was a fellow by the name of Thibodeau, who lives right at, I guess he said now, in the corner up there. And he was at the town meeting, and I don't know whether he had slept out there. So anyway, when the silence finally come down, he didn't move at all, he was right there. On la papa de la nurse, c'est un malade, on ira chercher la bonne femme Durand. The bonne femme Durand was an old pelle-à-feu. Do you know what that word is?
The midwife, I suppose?
Yeah. Oh, papa was a nurse, on ira chercher la bonne femme Durand.
Oh my God. So did it pass? Did they hire one?
Yes, they did for a while, but finally after the grip had gone by, I guess they cut it out, but the state come in and stepped in, and like we have now, state nurse supervised.
Was that around
1918,
wasn't it?
Eh?
Around 1918?
That's right, 1918.
Would you remember the name of the nurse?
No.
Yes, wasn't it... It wasn't Mrs. Pat Scott?
Mrs. Pat Scott.
Eva Violet?
Eva Violet.
Eva Violet.
Yeah. Joby Perron died 2-3 years ago when we were on High Street there. Well, I'm going to mention that he worked for Alan Hammond. I'm going to mention something about old man Alan Hammond, Papa Hammond, Lumber Company. Mr. Joe B. Perron of Van Buren had for a long time past been a trusted employee of Mr. Alan E. Hammond of Van Buren, owner of the Hammond Lumber Company. And every time that Mr. Hammond wanted something done, he'd always go to Joe as his trusted employee, and he'd give directions of what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And one day, Joe was very careful, and he was working around the farm and the lumber yard at the sawmill in Van Buren. And of course, there was a big barn, there were horses, there were farming implements, there was all kinds of tools, and of course those were all stored in sheds. One morning during the period of Lent, when Mr. Hammond come at his store, he run across Joe and he sent the following order. Joe, I swear avant Pranade, Paul Pirou, toutes les portes des chèques des granges, puis d'y boire rien. Oui, mais il dit, qu'est-ce que vous voulez dire par là? Il dit, vous, j'ai toujours eu les autres dans le chien de sang, boire tout le temps, j'ai toujours ça que je répète. Oui, mais tu me comprends pas. On est dans la semaine sainte, puis les habitants vont descendre faire le port. Puis il va être obligé de me remporter toutes mes canned dogs, puis mes pivets, puis mes chaînes.
That is good.
Yeah, that actually happened. And then another one related to the mill. Of course, the Hammond Lumber Company always lumbered in the upper St. John River, and their logs came down in the spring mixed up with the logs of other lumber companies down in Grand Falls, Woodstock, Fredericton, and St. John, New Brunswick. But in order to, so that the Hammond Lumber Company would take care of their own logs, they are somewhere near the neighborhood of Sedan Church. On a point there, they put up what they call a shear boom. A shear boom is a boom of logs connected with chains with kind of a wing on it. And you tie that on the shore and it swings out in the center. The wings stop it from coming back at shore. Then the logs would shear behind the island, and then that's where he got his logs. When they sorted those logs, he kept his own, and the other ones, they were all marked. down rivers. They push them down, they tear down there. So every spring when the drive started, either Mr. Hammond or some of his employees went up to a certain individual in St. Anne, a resident there, and hired him to, for the duration of the drive, to be on watch almost night and day to be sure that nobody comes and cuts that boom. If they did cut that boom, well, he'd lose all his load. And everything went along fine when this thing was repeated every spring. But one last spring, when the economics of the company were not as good as usual, you know how they handled bad, nobody, if they thought about it, nobody sent anybody to notify that man to go up there and put them on the job. And when they didn't come, he didn't go. And that lasted for about a week or so. And one morning, when the drivers on the drive of Mr. Hammond come out, they informed him that the boom had been cut during the night. And it is supposed that it was the watchman himself that went and cut the boom because he hadn't been asked, and consequently he wouldn't get anything. And Mr. Hammond told that to the drivers that were surrounding him, was very mad, and he said the men sympathized with him, and you know, the hang up if I quit man the sausage fishy. And oh, il dit qu'il va faire quoi de même, d'abord qu'il meurt, ça va direct sur le job, il dit. Yeah, the other one here, this is one about, oh well, where it's not from Van Buren, it's on the, in the province of Quebec. It's a Chaudière-Rivière, that goes by at Saint-Joseph. And at that place there had been a mill a long time owned by the Price brothers of the city of Quebec. They were big lumbermen. And they had a sawmill, and every winter they lumbered on the Sevier River, and in the spring they drove the logs down and sent them in the boom to furnish the mill during the summer season. And after the mill had been built where it was for a long time, the Canadian National Railway built its road going up there through the province of Quebec, and they went and touched the shore of the Chaudière River about 2 miles north of where their old mill was. So they decided then they had to truck, and in those days it was with horses and mules, they didn't have any trucks. They had to haul their manufactured lumber and load it on cars at that place there where the railroad touched. So they decided, instead of repairing the old mill, they built a new modern mill right there at that siding. And of course they put a boom at that place to stop all their logs. And the old boom stayed where it was there. So in the springtime, when it comes around April 1st and the snow began to thaw, those river drivers, they're anxious to go. Once they're your river driver, when the time comes, so they buy driving boots with big long corks, and they go and walk in my house, and they splinter all the floors of the neighborhood with those cork shoes on. But they didn't send the men on the drive until the spring thaw came on, that the ice would leave, and then the water would raise, and then they would drive the logs. But the temperature was nice, and there was no sign of rain, and there was no rain predicted, and the water wasn't raising a bit, and it got so that the Price brothers, they began to worry. They had probably $1.5 million there in logs right in the wood, which had to come out. That's the only way to come out. And so did the men. They'd come on shore, and they'd come at the office, where the thing, and no news of rain or anything at all. And there was one, a relative of the Price brothers, I don't know whether it was a brother or not. Anyway, he was the clerk and paymaster, he was the old manager of that section there. And he spoke in broken French. And the natives there, they couldn't speak English very well, but they talk about themselves, and they appointed a committee of 2-3 to go ahead and see and put up this proposition to the Price manager. They said, Coquet, vous allez pouvoir tirer de la paroisse, là, qui fait chanter une grand-mère pour les biens de la terre. C'est-tu bon, ça? Oui, c'est bon, certain. Mais vous autres, comment ça coûte, ça? Ben, une grand-mère coûte 5 piastres, puis une basse-messe coûte 2 piastres. Est-ce que vous autres, vous le connaissez, votre curé? Si je vous donne 5 piastres, voulez-vous aller y donner? Oui, oui, on va aller y porter. Ça fait qu'il est parti. This fellow here wasn't a member of the Catholic faith. And then the rain began to come down after a few days, just a short few days afterwards. And the water went up, the ice came down, the logs came down and broke the boom at that mill, and it all went down 2 miles below at the other mill. But anyway, they had the logs, they didn't lose them. So they wanted to give that fella a religious lesson. He said, toi tu crées pas ça, que c'était bon des messes. Créer, oui, c'est bon, il dit. Mais il dit, moi je trouve, il dit, qu'un gros messe c'était trop fort, un petit messe aurait été gang bang.
That's good.
The raspberry season, and they had all the stores along the St. John River, went ahead and bought picked raspberries from the natives, and they had those little barrels that Johnson furnished, and they came down on the train and by trucks, and they all brought that down at that factory, and they went ahead and processed them.
What year was that?
Oh, that lasted for 10-15 years.
Well, who was the manager? You didn't mean the manager. Who was the manager?
Well, the local manager here was Joe Filios Mador. He was the one.
How many people did it employ?
Oh, it employed quite a number of people. And, my God, when I was looking at that, sometimes when I eat some raspberry jam there, by God, sometimes I got to stop eating it. You'd look out there in those barrels and this thing would boil with worms in there. La bouillette. But that was steam that I don't know how high a temperature it was all killed. But they took those barrels and dumped it in those big pots.
That's